now your host, Brad Behrens. Over to you, Brad.
Hi, everybody. My name is Brad Behrens. I am the editor-in-chief here at the Interactive Advertising Bureau. Welcome to IAB There. There is a blackout in my town. I live in Portland, Oregon. And so I hope that you'll forgive me for coming at you from the dark. How lucky it is that I have a little portable internet device that should last for half an hour. So thank you for joining us. I there to connect the interactive community, which during this time of coronavirus, it is Tuesday, April 28th. Again, please forgive me for being a little blurrier and possibly a little more buffered than usual. Our topic today is coronavirus's impact now and in the future on programmatic ad buying. We are very blessed that Andrew Casale of Index Exchange is about to join us. Before he does, let me remind you, as I always do, that you can ask questions if you wish on Twitter. And the hashtag is all caps, one word, IAB there. Once again, IAB there, one word, all caps. Our team will be monitoring Twitter to see if you have any questions. So please pose them there. And if we can please bring Andrew Casale, the president and CEO of Index Exchange, into the stream, we'll get going. Andrew, welcome to IAB there. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Brad. And great quick work on the Wi-Fi. It's certainly a testament to the resilience of our business to be able to pivot on a dime like that.
And also, chance favors the prepared mind. And one of our producers, Connor Healy, was the person who insisted that I have the little MiFi box. So thank you, Connor. You've saved the day. Now, I've known your family for a while, and I've known Casale Media for a while. And a few years back, Casale Media morphed into Index Exchange. You're coming to us from Toronto today. Casale is a Canadian company, although a huge global network as well. Tell us about that transition. How did Casale become Index Exchange?
Absolutely. It's a great story. It's a long story, so I'll try to be very brief. But I think there's three core things to know about our company. The first is that we're one of the original ad tech companies, and we're still here today and thriving. We've been around a long time. Our company started right at the bottom of the dot-com bust, which is also a bit of a, an interesting learning spot for what's to come after this big global crisis. And there's a lot of, lessons that we can draw from that too. The second thing to know is that we are an engineering company at our core. Half our company's headcount builds and is an engineering and product. And the third thing to know is that we're an independent company. No VC in Index. I've never raised any capital. We've done it the hard way. It takes a lot longer, but we wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. And so, if you kind of align that to the series of events that have preceded this moment, the ad tech ecosystem has really grown up and really evolved and really changed. There's been a series of innovations that have led that, a lot of disruption along the way. And through that, we've been able to pivot our company in order to ensure that we're driving value and delivering value to the marketplace. And so Index was really born of the recognition that the automated era was here. The time of the four martini lunch and the fax machine and the insertion order wasn't really going to last and wasn't going to be sustainable. And it was an incredibly interesting space for us to flex our engineering muscle. And so Casale's pivot into Index was a multi-year pivot. It started in 2011, and completed in 2015 with the rename.
All right. Well, thank you. I want to warn the audience that if you lose me because of the power problems, then I'll beg Andrew's indulgence and we'll reschedule for another time since I'm flicking in and out. But so the topic for today is the impact of coronavirus on programmatic. And I guess the first question is, we in our spend research, we saw an initial uptick in investment in programmatic. The labor in changing how programmatic gets programmed, given the fact that people's lives are up in the air. What is the impact in March? What were you seeing in March? What are you seeing so far? In April, what do you?
That's a great question. And it's certainly something that we've been tracking and living on a literally daily basis. Certainly, there was no real warning for this event. And seemingly, as our world began to freeze over and we all started to move inside, our market, and one of its greatest strengths being its agility, really showed its strength. And so what we saw through the course of March was almost typically through the course of a quarter or through the course of a month, we see ad spend grow day to day, week to week, and certainly a buildup to the end of a quarter where a lot of marketers end up putting out the rest of their budget. March ran in reverse from that. And so it ran in reverse in the sense that we saw a few things take place. There were the brands that immediately froze and pulled out. All the obvious categories there being, travel, hospitality, offline entertainment. One that was a little less intuitive, but makes a lot of sense now. Automotive also had a current climate. You can't really buy a car like you used to. And so I think that marketing has followed suit. On the whole, though, the month of March ended up basically down day to day to the end of it, and it led us into April. And April was really the sense of what the true bottom of this event was going to be. We developed the phrasing that April is going to be another January in our ecosystem. And for those of you that have been in this business a long time, January is typically the low point in ad spend. April certainly showed us the same thing, at least in this corona climate, and was our bottom, certainly declined relative to even the declines we saw in March. But from April 1st, it's actually been encouraging. We've seen a lot of hope return and a lot of brands return to the market too. And so from the 1st of April forward, we've seen growth, week over week and day over day growth. It's certainly by no means the April that any of us would have forecasted. But we've started to see one interesting development, which is we certainly have a lot of brands that are frozen and paused in the obvious categories. But then we have some brands that have retooled and come back to market. And so what we saw was, marketers that had creative and messaging that really just didn't fit a COVID world pulled back in March for obvious reasons. You can't really have creative with groups of people or families celebrating in the light of this environment. So they all went dark, but they've started to retool and come back in April. And we've started to see a pretty big surge in brands. We've even seen some stabilization. The retail category is looking pretty robust after a dip as well. And so we're expecting the same to develop throughout the remainder of the quarter and hopefully return us to some form of normal before the end of Q2. Recognizing that Brad has dropped, I'll continue that until I'm told to stop talking. There's one interesting development that we've also certainly talked a lot about and worked with marketers on, and that's funding, publishing, and news. And so, the tools in ad tech and the science in ad tech is incredible. We can do things today that we've never been able to do before. But some decisions that have turned out to be binary decisions really shouldn't be. So for instance, it's quite common for marketers to pull back from any content that's deemed to be negative or controversial. And unfortunately, Corona has been lumped up with that. And so has a huge surge in volume that publishers have seen. We've reached out to quite a few marketers and also spoken to agencies on their behalf. And what we've learned is that one of the reasons for the pullback isn't just the, kind of the science working overdrive, but it is this retooling creative messaging element. If the message isn't really COVID appropriate, the brands are, being incredibly risk adverse to avoid any negative exposure. But they do see a return coming. When campaigns are retooled, creatives on point, messages are appropriate to now, we're hearing really positive things about them returning to environments that they kind of made that binary decision on in the early days of COVID. So for media companies and publishers out there, we do expect a continued uptick to come.
Hey, Andrew.
Can anyone hear me?
Yes, bro, we can hear you. Andrew, I'm happy to fill in and continue the interview as Brad has some technical difficulties here. What ad categories have you seen the most impact? Are you seeing any bright spots right now?
That's a great question. So, you know, the most impacted categories are the obvious ones: travel, hospitality, outdoor entertainment, anything like that, movies, releases. So you can kind of like put those aside because everybody knows that. You know, the surprising one for us, or at least early on, was automotive. The pullback there is real. It's pretty close to travel. But again, not a huge shocker if you can't really go to a car lot and test drive a car. The bright spots, though, are unique to this time and potentially not going away anytime soon. So one of the bright spots has been business. We're all working in new environments and we're doing everything we can to thrive. You know, Brad jumping onto the cellular Wi-Fi, an example of that. Business has to keep going. So we've seen some pretty exciting engagement here from everyone from Slack to Microsoft Teams to the Google products to Zoom. They're really stepping up and helping to promote a virtual workplace. And they're filling some of the void that some of those categories have left. Media has been huge. We're all, you know, living in bunkers, kind of bored. Streaming services have really stepped up from, you know, Disney Plus to CBS and a bunch of them. They're marketing aggressively right now. They're looking for those new subscribers and they're trying to give us something to do with our time. And that's been huge. And it's helped fill a huge void in the market. And then finally, retail. And retail has been interesting and, you know, you can kind of make retail and e-commerce are sort of synonymous. There has been a huge drop in the number of advertisers in this category. So a lot of businesses have kind of pulled back. However, those that remain, and it's a lot of the bigger brands and the bigger box platforms, they've actually really stepped it up. And so the retail category is actually the first that we consider to have recovered. So we saw, you know, its typical trajectory in March. Once we hit mid-March, there was a big dip. It bottomed on April 1st. Literally in the last week, it has now recovered to pre-COVID levels. And that's really on the back of big brands, whether it be Target, Walmart, or whomever, fill in the void. But so there have been, you know, some negatives, but there's also been some bright spots too, which has been encouraging.
Well, I'm going to tag team it back to Brad, who just came back on. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to throw some questions in. But Brad, I'll hand the microphone back to you. Thanks again.
Can you hear me is the question.
Yeah, sound great.
Well, it's the power, as you can see, has come back on, although internet is still low. I'm afraid I've missed the last few minutes. Thank you for gallantly continuing. One thing that I thought I heard as I was coming in and out and I'd like to talk with you about is in your blog on Index Exchange, flat is the new up was one phrase that I thought was very provocative. We're starting to see that. We'll be releasing some research this week on spend. Sue Hogan, our SVP of research, will be joining us on Thursday. But unpack flat is the new up for us. Will you tell me what that means? And is it as dire as it sounds?
You know, we're trying to draw inspiration from wherever we can right now. And we have, you know, incredible customers, media companies all over the world who work with Index. And we're trying to provide them as much guidance as we can from the buyers that we also partner closely with. And so that phrasing has actually been borrowed from one of our buyers who we just loved it and we thought it was appropriate for the time. And what it really means is like just change the focus that, you know, we all came into 2020 with incredible goals, big plans, big targets. That is not the playbook anymore. And it might not be the playbook for the entirety of the year. And so rather than looking at the even bigger chasm that may have been caused on account of the fact that we're not necessarily growing as we anticipated, one point of focus to just start with is let's get back to where we were this time last year, at the very least, that's the flat, because it's a little bit of a more addressable reality for today. It's a benchmark that we can use. It's a little less demoralizing than maybe our lofty targets. And we're starting to see it happen. And retail is kind of that first example where we saw a category that did get rocked right after COVID start to recover. And so if we start to see this across other categories, we first get back to flat. And once we're at that baseline, then we can start talking about what the remainder of the year looks like. So it was sort of like a recommended midway milestone for everybody to shoot for instead of whatever their targets for the year may have ended up being.
So let's just dig in on that for a minute, because I think we need to celebrate optimism wherever we find it. And you earlier at the beginning, before the internet decided to boot me out for a moment, you were saying that April is the true bottom. And so forgive me if John covered this already, but it sounds like you're looking at an upward swing and you're feeling pretty optimistic about the rest of the year. What's the basis of that optimism?
Yeah, so just to recap a little bit of what preceded the comment, March was it was a bit of a depressing trend, to be perfectly honest, and to speak on behalf of a lot of our customers. Every day was a new low, and that was felt all across programmatic. We've never seen that before. We've seen dips, we've seen weird trends, but we've never seen each day set a new low. And so April certainly bested March in that respect. But it's stopped since the 1st. So after April 1st, we've started to set new highs seemingly daily. And so that's really what we're pointing to and what's encouraging, because it did kind of feel like a spiral that wasn't stopping, but it stopped. And we've returned to, COVID growth. And, that's being backstopped by us seeing marketers that pulled out come back too. And that's the camp that we kind of consider to be the retoolers. And so that's what's driving a lot of the optimism we're seeing. It's by no means the April anyone had forecasted, let's just be clear. But we have stopped that trend, and we've returned to some semblance of at least day-to-day, week-to-week growth now.
I think it was T.S. Eliot who said April is the cruelest month, which is good because it's almost May. Did John have a chance to talk with you about creative when I was booted?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I briefly touched on that. Yeah.
Okay. So then let's you've been very involved with something that's very dear to our hearts here at the IAB, which is Project ReArc. Project ReArc was a response, for those of you who may not know, to Chrome, the Google and the Chrome blog, announcing in January that on a 2-year timeframe, they would follow Safari and Firefox's lead in eliminating third-party cookies. The third-party cookie, of course, is the building block for much of the internet. So, Andrew, you've been quite involved with ReArc. What is Index Exchange's perspective on it? What are you excited about? And what do you see the biggest challenges are? And then post third-party cookie opportunities. Like, tell us how this is going to affect your business.
Definitely. There's a lot of things to say, so I'll try to start at the beginning, which is really just the underlying fundamental here, which is we built an ecosystem, we built a market, we certainly built a programmatic stack, largely on the back of an identifier that was very brittle. And, in hindsight, probably wasn't the best idea, but got us where we are, and that identifier being the cookie. Forget about Chrome and forget about some of the recent priorities the industry is now putting at the top of the list. For years and years and years, everyone's griped about that cookie. Doesn't work cross device, it's brittle, breaks. You get all those things in ghostery, you get the consumer questions. There's just a lot of negative that came from it. And so what preceded Google's move was, on one hand, Apple with Safari, who really has been third-party cookie-free for many, many years, and they really just clamped down all the side doors with what they did in ITP. And then in the fall, we saw Firefox follow suit. And so really then you were left with just one major browser that hadn't made a move, and it was inevitable that they would too. And so the January announcement, if anything, just accelerated the inevitable, which was we have to do better. We've always had to do better. We've just never made it an industry priority to go beyond this brittle identifier. So what's it going to mean? There is a lot of work to be done, without a question. It effectively requires a rethink of everything we do, compressed now into at least a 2-year time frame, if not it extended a little bit on account of COVID. We'll see what Google decides to do there.
Interesting.
And we camp it down into 3 big buckets. The impact this has on addressability. How do you make media addressable without the cookie or without the third-party cookie at least? So how do you target? How do you deliver the right message to the right person? Frequency capping, good old frequency capping. It's so basic, but it is actually crippled when you don't have a third-party cookie because you can't do it cross-site. and measurement and attribution, which is, you know, where we really should be starting the conversation instead of from the perspective of targeting. If the media ceases to be measurable, you know, any marketer that I talk to doesn't feel really good about continuing to invest in the space. And so the impacts this has on measurability and attribution, I think, are critically important. And getting that right is really, 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 you know, vital in this next course of action. And so when you think of ReArc, it's really the sum of all of that, you know, looking at what did we use the cookie for before? What do we all do? What are all the use cases? What lives in each of those buckets? What do we want to continue to do tomorrow? And how can we approach that? And the short answer is going to be, there will not be one solution. There will not be one answer. There will not be one bet that we can place. There's going to be a multitude of proposed approaches with varying degrees of addressability, with varying degrees of measurability based on the environment. And so for, you know, from Index's perspective, I'll say a few things. This isn't a new space for us as a company. We've been beating the drum of identity and the need to prioritize this for literally years. And for a while there, it felt like we were the odd one out, and now it feels like everyone is joining the party, which is incredible because we need everyone to do this. So we feel pretty well prepared. We know it's going to be a lot of cat herding. There's a lot of pieces of this industry to align on some of these solutions. I think ReArc is going to be an incredible umbrella to get that done, but we've got to roll up our sleeves and get to work. And ultimately, there are going to be varying strategies that our customers, publishers, media companies deploy, and we're going to be there to support them there too. You know,
so what about the buy side? How are you messaging to the buy side about what they will still be able to do and what they will no longer be able to do versus and what they will have to do differently, which are three slightly different but overlapping categories? What's the downside for losing the third party cookie? I understand you've been advocating for it for a long time, but it did provide certain capabilities that were going to have to recreate and change. So tell me what
it... Yeah, it's really starting from the kind of the optimistic view. Like, if you look at the macro industry narrative, forget about cookies, forget about ID, forget about Chrome, and just take a slightly high level view of some of the topics that we've seen donning trades and trade shows, or I should say conferences, for years and years. It's that an increasingly larger amount of the growth in this ecosystem is going to a small number of companies. You know, it was 70% of new ad spend to 80% to somewhere near 90%. I don't know the exact numbers today, but year to year to year, we're seeing more and more and more growth go to fewer and fewer platforms. And so that's being driven by marketers making these decisions. And if you talk to those marketers, you know, they'll tell you that they're not doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. They're doing it because these platforms solve a lot of their problems. And one of them at the front and center is attribution works really, really well when there's a closed loop system with a completely deterministic identifier, like some of these platforms have available to marketers. And it solves not just targeting, but it solves measurement. And it works, and it's clean, and it's simple, and it's easy. So that's where we take our cue. If we're to do anything to improve the fundamental macro narrative around this ecosystem, we have to solve that problem. It just so happens that we don't really have a choice anymore because we're also going to lose the cookie now. So on one hand, I'd say if you forget about Chrome, we had to listen to the marketer anyway because they were voting with their wallet and telling us that the cookie wasn't cutting it. And that's just been amped up now by us not necessarily being able to latch on for the cookie much longer. To us, it's just been a crutch. And I think it's been ignoring the needs of marketers for far too long. But that's where I take my cue, and that's the conversation I'm getting from the marketers. I'm doing less telling marketers what to do or what to think and just doing more listening. I've been asking them, what should we do? And the answer continues to be solve this problem, and a lot will fall in place. So that's where the guidance is coming from the buy side.
So it sounds like it's you're not letting the grass grow under you on these issues, but first party data is one of the things that we're expecting to be heavying up on. And I'm curious what Index Exchange is doing now versus what it'll be planning to do as we get closer and closer to that deadline. So, and also whose first party data are you able, let's start with publishers. What are you doing with publishers? Because for premium publishers, this seems like a pretty difficult but ripe opportunity to start really solidifying the value of their audience with their partners on the buy side. So how is Index Exchange facilitating this?
Yeah, so there's, you kind of want to try to break down first party data if you can, and just in half. So there's the first party data that each participant has to enrich an opportunity in some way. So take a publisher, they have their own first party audiences. They might know that this is a if it's a typical news publisher, this is the business executive, or this is the sports enthusiast, or what have you. And it's great data, and it's first party data, and it's useful. And so, to whatever degree we can help enable them to bring that data into programmatic, whether it be to make their deals that they're doing with buyers addressable, or to segment their inventory in ways that help optimize for yield. We do that, and we're going to do that all day long. But then there's a separate pool of first-party data, and that's the marketer's first-party data. And marketers know an awful lot about their consumers. They have incredibly valuable data of their own, whether it's a big automotive who knows which of their customers in varying stages of a renewal of a lease, or whether it's a big retailer who has incredibly rich shopper data. And you can just go down the list. There's so many that have this. And for years and years and years, our bridge to that data has been the cookie. So we have used the cookie to try to bridge from the publisher to the marketer's first party data in a way that's very brittle, and in a way that really hasn't checked the box to the nearly to the degree that the big walled gardens have. And when we look forward, we want to solve both use cases better. And so use case one is really, focusing on what the publisher has. And there's a variety of platforms that are solving this problem already that we can wire into the exchange. And then it's, what is the new bridge? So what is the new way a publisher can allow, let's say, General Motors to use their gigantic customer file and all their rich data to make media addressable, or even just to solve the attribution problem after the fact. And we see the need for bridges here. And one of the obvious bridges that's likely to come, and no guarantees, but I think it's well in its way, is authentication. Certainly a small number of publishers today have, a logged in audience or an audience that is authenticated, but wherever they have that, they then have the means from their own first party to bridge into a marketer's data set, which is where it gets really, really interesting. And so that's kind of how we're trying to help. But it's really just breaking down this first party concept a little bit, because when you take away the third party cookie, the ability to bridge from the publisher to the marketer is compromised. And we need a new bridge in order to continue to drive the outcomes they're looking for.
Well, we're almost out of time. So let me ask you one last question, and it's a personal question, which is, what are you doing as a person or individual to stay connected and optimistic? You certainly you seem very optimistic. We're always trying to get tips and tricks for people about how to greet the morning. So what are you doing?
I'm drawing a lot from our past experiences. So I think I mentioned that the company started at a pretty bad time on the internet, at the bottom of the .com bust. No one thought this space was particularly interesting, but look what happened after that. We were a company through the banking crisis of 08 and saw the hits that came from that, but we saw the other side of it, and it did drive a lot of the innovation that we now all rely upon today in the automated programmatic arena. And so one of the things that I'm drawing on and kind of reiterating is this is a really bad time, no doubt. Nobody wants to see what's happening in our local communities, the impacts to our business and ad spend. But what follows events like this is usually very, very positive change in innovation. And what might that be? And I think our ReR conversation is a salient one, because I do think it's definitely going to be something that a lot of people are thinking about now with heightened focus, but there could be others as well. And so that's really what we're trying to put our energy towards. What follows? This will end. We don't know exactly when, but we know this will end. What does this event help accelerate on the other side? And what can we be doing now and focusing on now so that we can all thrive on the other side of this? That's where I'm drawing my inspiration. And I hope a lot of the IAB member companies will hopefully do the same, and we can find a way to turn this into a positive in the end.
Well, Andrew Casale, thank you so much for joining us. I want to, in particular, thank you for being so deft and gracious as we've had to wrestle with some rather surprising technical difficulties. Thank you so much for joining us on IAB there. I hope we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
So on tomorrow's show, we're excited to welcome Ari Paparo, the CEO of Beeswax. We will look at how consolidation and machine learning are changing the landscape in the programmatic space. So another day on programmatic tomorrow. IAB There is a production of the Interactive Advertising Bureau. Our show today was produced by Connor Healy, Joe Ons, John Ward, Tufika Mahinadin, and Haley Bloom. I'm Brad Behrens, editor-in-chief here at the IAB. Thank you so much for joining us. Please come back tomorrow. If you're interested in viewing this video again or any of our previous videos, please visit our archive, which is at iab.com/there. Come back, join us again tomorrow at 2 p.m. because if it's a weekday and it's 2 p.m. Eastern, then you know it's time to IAB there. Thank you for your patience and for joining us today. Have a great rest of the day, everybody. Bye-bye now.